Night Talking Travel. Welcome, Sally.
Welcome. Thank you, Amanda.
Oh, dear. What are we talking about today?
Well, I just was trying to think yesterday. I'd been to Sydney for a couple of days and my head was all over the shop. Can I just say briefly, I was impressed with what's happened in Sydney, not having been there since prior COVID, except for damn well at the Mantra at the airport going to Perth backwards and forwards.
Right.
But like I used the new metro driverless trains, I caught the ferry to Barangaroo, I caught the light rail and got round everywhere, went to beautiful exhibitions at the MCA Gallery and the Australian Museum. I thought, wow, you know, and I stayed in Surry Hills, which I've never done before, and how great is that?
Yeah.
All the terraces, those beautiful terraces, all the little shops. I'm thinking, wow, I should just talk about Sydney tomorrow. But no, I'm not going to. I've just done it.
Next week.
No, I'm actually going to talk about some of the smallest countries in the world.
All right.
It's one of them. And a few tips on cruising and how to bag yourself maybe a cruise bargain.
Oh, that sounds great. Got Sally here and we're going to talk about the smallest countries.
Yeah, I just thought it was quite interesting. I was reading an article where someone had been on a cruise and did a shore excursion from Ancona, which is on the east coast of Italy, sort of between Pescara and Bologna, if you can imagine that, almost the middle in the Apennine region of Italy. And they did a day trip to San Marino. And that just made me think about it because it's an independent country within Italy and it is landlocked. So I thought, well, let's have a look and see how many, smallest countries in the world there are. And there's actually 15. But then you start looking at landlocked countries and there's 45 landlocked countries.
Wow.
Now, some of the 15 are landlocked as well, but not all of them. So to start with the smallest of which I'm sure everybody knows which one it is without me even saying it, is the Vatican City. And I guess most people have been there, but some of the other smallest countries you may not have been to or not even know about. Now, for example, Vatican City is only 1/8 the size of New York Central Park, to give you an idea.
Wow.
So that's tiny, isn't it, when you think about it? And it exists because in 1929, Pope Pius XI signed a treaty as compensation for the Vatican's loss of influence elsewhere in Italy. So they wanted to make sure they had their influence maintained. And, of course, the boundaries encompass St. Peter's Square, the Sistine Chapel and the Vatican Gardens there. Now, another one you probably know about as well would be Monaco,
yep,
of course.
Been there. It's great.
Yeah, and it's 30 times smaller than Manhattan in New York.
Wow.
It encompasses an area of just 1.994 square kilometres, whereas the Vatican City is only 0.49 square kilometres. So everyone knows about it. Of course, it's famous, and you've got the wonderful geographic hallmark there, the Rock of Monaco, which provides a really great vantage point that emphasises its smallness, if you like, with the entirety of the urban expanse visible from that point. The third smallest is Nauru, which is quite, as we know, close to us and I guess infamous from our point of view because that's where a lot of the refugees have been imprisoned, unfortunately.
Yep.
It's 70 times smaller than London. And it only occupies an area of 20.9 square kilometres. So it's earned the distinction of being not only the smallest island country in the world, but also in the world. So, yes, that's Nauru. And close behind that, of course, is Tuvalu, which we've heard about recently, of course, with climate change and the rising sea levels and how they're really suffering from that as well and they want more to be done. They've got an area of only 25.8 square kilometres and it's the second smallest country in Oceania. But, yes, it's got a high point of only 15 feet above sea level.
Oh, okay.
Right, so that's why it's such,
it's
such an issue for them. And then what started all this was San Marino, which I'm getting to, and it's the fifth smallest. To give you an idea, it's 10 times smaller than Chicago. It's 62 square kilometres. It's an enclaved microstate, and as I said, it's situated on that northeastern side of the Apennine Mountains in Italy, and, of course, it's also landlocked. Mount Titano is the highest peak in the country as well, and it's got three incredible towers perched on top of it. Just look all over San Marino's territory, but it's quite rugged, mountainous landscape and very, very different there as well. Now, the next one in Europe that's also landlocked is Liechtenstein. So it's 9 times smaller than Mexico City, 160 square kilometres, and its neighbours are Switzerland to the west and south and Austria to the east. Its capital is Vaduz and German is its main language, but 34% of the inhabitants are foreigners. Interesting, isn't it? Mm. So it's known for its mountainous terrain, many winter sports, etc., but it's a tax haven. So it attracts the active wealth. And, of course, the country's economy depends on international companies that in turn benefit from their low taxes. So there you go. That's really interesting. So that's just six in that area. And then, of course, a lot of the others, Marshall Islands is another one, which is in the Pacific Ocean, of course, but it comprises 29 atolls and five islands. But it's very flat as well, and it only gets about 10 feet above sea level in some areas.
Gee, that's not much.
No, they're very diminutive islands. And a lot of the others, other than the Maldives, which is one in the Seychelles, are mainly in the Caribbean area. So like St. Kitts and Nevis, and also Grenada, Barbados, Antigua, etc. But also in the Indian Ocean, as I said, the Seychelles. But Malta is the other one. Sorry, I missed in Europe. That's another one. And it's an archipelago in the Mediterranean Sea. And it composes of three main islands on that one. It's 216 square kilometres in kilometre. But it's always been a very strategically important place in Europe because of the scene of battles over the years. And, of course, it's been ruled by several countries over the years. But it got its final independence from Britain. But a very interesting country to go to with beautiful coloured houses and beautiful little cobblestone streets, and it's a fascinating country to visit. Now, whether you've been, a lot of our listeners have been to any of these or not, I don't know, but I just thought it was just interesting to talk about some of these smallest countries that you can go and visit. Yeah, why not? Just something different. I like to see if there's somewhere different you haven't been yet.
I haven't been to a lot of those places, so
And
my holidays are due in January, so you've
just got to keep adding these things to your bucket list, Amanda.
Bucket list is very,
every
very
Friday
long
your bucket list grows.
That's right. Yes, and we're cruising now.
We are. It's that time of the year when everyone in the cruise market, or all the shipping companies, should I say, in the cruise market, have what they call a cruise week. And October tends to be that month where all the cruises get promoted. So I thought, well, I may as well jump on the bandwagon with them and
why not?
And talk about cruising. We have never had as many vessels as we have now cruising our oceans. So it's important to think about, what's a perfect cruise for you, and how should a perfect cruise guest behave? And I think that's a lot of common sense there too. So not to moralise, but obviously, you know, there are certain things that you should do, like any holiday, not just a cruise ship, of course. And in another country, you behave yourself and put on your best front, not your worst.
That's right.
And that doesn't always happen.
No, it does
with
not.
Some Aussies or some other country citizens as well. But think about what you want to in the destination of the destination and of the ship. Like, if you're not into large cruise ships, well, don't pick one that's got anything from 2,000 to 4,000 passengers. You know, look at your small ship cruising. Also, your budget. What's your budget? How much do you want to spend? There are budget liners that won't include all the gratuities and specialty dining and that. But if you're not into specialty dining, if you don't drink alcohol, for example, you may prefer to do that. And then you can choose then what you wish to drink. You can choose the amount of gratuities you would like to leave. So it's horses for courses, you know what I mean? Some people like just to think, no, it's all paid, all up front. I don't have to worry. I don't have to put my hand in my pocket. Everything's covered.
Yeah.
So that's a nice way of looking at it as well. But, I mean, obviously, you've still got to look at your budget. So that's really important. Obviously, small ships, too, are more likely to run on cleaner marine gas oil rather than heavy fuel oil. So if you're conscious about the environment, you may choose also from not just from the less amount of passengers, but just from an eco point of view, you might prefer, you know, to travel on these smaller vessels. So just keep that in mind as well. Like companies such as Aurora, Lindblad, Ponant and Hurtigruten are virtually almost green. So that's just good to know. Plan ahead to avoid disappointment, because even though I'm saying we've got more cruise ships than ever, they're booking out quicker and quicker. Like, you can't believe it, especially when you might want a specific type of cabin on a specific deck. You don't want an inside cabin, you want an outside, or you want a balcony, or you want a stateroom, or you don't want to be lower down on the deck, you want to be on an upper deck, you know. So you really need to still hop on board early if you want to make sure you get the cabin of your choice. So keep that in mind. There's not as probably as many bargains as there used to be, like a lot of discounts now, because most of the ships fill up anyway, so they don't have to offer the discounts. But if there is one out there, we'll grab it.
Of course.
You know, and sometimes if they're just trying to top up the ship at the last minute, you might grab a bargain, particularly if there's retirees that, you know, don't have to worry about a fixed time of year, that they've got fixed holidays. That's when you're often going to get a really good deal. So keep that in mind as well. And also think about how you behave on board. you know, just remember that.
Don't be a goose.
Just and don't.
That's a polite way of saying it.
Yeah, and don't. I mean, there will be dress codes on a lot of the vessels now, but it's not like the old days where it was all the formal gatherings. So, but you know, smart casual. So they often don't want you to wear shorts, singlets, thongs, even jeans, some of them, but they will always have that usually on their daily newsletter, or you can check. These days you can go on your website with the particular cruise company, just look at everything that they're offering. If you want a kids-free cruise, well, you need to look at that. If you're taking your children, they make sure their children, them will behave as well, and don't have them running rampant while you just sit there and think, oh, no.
I'm on holidays,
you know, and let them just run wild. So control your kids, you know, and the crew aren't your unpaid babysitters, you know. It's just remember that too. Mm. There's a lot of things to consider, but that doesn't mean you're not going to have a good holiday. You will, particularly like any holiday. The more you plan, the earlier you start planning, the more research you do. Go to your travel agent if you're not au fait with computers and you're not sure what to do. That's what they're there for. They're there to help you make the best of your holiday and get the most out of it. So the more you do in preparation, the more you're going to enjoy it. Same as shore excursions. Like if you book a couple of months, all the shore excursions may be fully booked.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, so you need to get online and do that early as well. But having said that, there's nothing wrong with going ashore and wandering. It's nice just to do your own thing
just
as well.
It.
You know, yeah, I like doing that. That's me. I certain things I will book an excursion for where I think I need that interpretation by a guide of what I'm seeing that might not offer that if you're doing it on your own. Mm. So, you know, there's horses for courses again. Like you might want to book some excursions and others. You just want to go out, hire a bike, walk, get a ferry,
chill,
whatever. Enjoy the ambience of wherever you are, you know. So there's lots of things to look at when you're booking a cruise, but all of it will make it a better holiday for you if you think about it in advance and think about what you want out of that cruise.
That's good advice. Well, thank you, Sal.
We'll keep going
shortly. And we've got hot deals, Sal.
We certainly have, and we're starting with a couple of the cruising ones, seeing as we're into the cruise month. The Arctic and Beyond in 2026. So this is with Aurora Expeditions. They've launched their new 2026 season. Of course, they're all small ship cruising again with eco vessels, beautiful new vessels. They've got 42 departures now on three purpose-built small ships. They started with one, but they've got three now, which is excellent. And they go to the polar regions like Svalbard, Greenland, even doing a, what's the word? I can't even think of it. When you have the sun and the...
Eclipse.
Thank you. The word wouldn't come.
Thank you. Oh,
I'm joining you today. I'm having one of those days.
I know.
But they also do the Northwest Passage. They've got three new cruises that go into Raja Ampat and Indonesia Borneo. Yes, the solar eclipse it is actually, which is in 2026 on their Jewels of the Arctic itinerary, which is actually in Greenland, the eclipse.
I can recommend a solar eclipse actually. I saw one when I was in Cornwall.
Oh, did you?
In 1999, I want to say. And it was amazing. So,
Wow, fantastic. They've got departures to Scotland and Costa Rica, including a brand new 7-day one into Costa Rica. It's considered one of the most diverse countries in the world, and the amount of flora and fauna it has, stunning. If you've never done that region, it's just supposed to blow your mind. But they've also got small ship cruises to the Mediterranean, Atlantic Coast, British Isles and Ireland. And they've got a new solo offer with 10 dedicated solo staterooms per sailing with no single supplement available on all voyages on this new season. So isn't that lovely for the solo travellers?
Yeah, definitely.
That makes such a big difference if you don't have to pay, you know, as if there's another person in the room with you. And there's not. Mark's not here, but good on you, Mark. Here you go if you're listening. Hurtigruten. They are having some wonderful journeys, of course, during Norway's summer magic, which they do. And they've got departures for next year into that lovely time of the year above the Arctic Circle, where the midnight sun just sort of bathes these wonderful iconic fjords in wonderful golden light during its summer months. So if you don't want to go in the winter, there's the other opportunity, even if you don't want to see the Aurora Borealis, it's just as beautiful in the summer months. And there's savings of up to $1,400 per cabin. That offer ends on the 15th Yes, the 15th of October. Coral Expedition's a lovely little Australian company that does some incredible cruises, not just around here, but they pop up into Indonesia as well, Borneo, etc., those regions, New Guinea. But they're doing the wonderful Abrolhos Islands and the coral coast of Western Australia, which is just a stunning part of our country as well. They've got some 12-night cruises departing Broome and Fremantle in March and April 2026. And there are still some vacancies available on 2025, yeah, but you need to get in quick because, again, these are small vessels, so it doesn't take long for them to fill up and book out. And they've got some good prices on those at the moment. Aurora, we did mention Aurora, it's doing that Greenland solar eclipse. Just keep that in mind. It's a special itinerary for that. It's 15 days on the 2nd of August 2026 on the Greg Mortimer, and they've got a reduction on that at the moment of 10%. If you get in early, just until sold out on that one. And then also there's some new expeditions doing the Upper Amazon.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, with Lindblad Expeditions. They've got a new vessel called the Delphin 3. Bookings are open for 2026 on that, and you can have special savings if you book by the 31st of December. And some of those, for example, will include like land extensions as well, like going into Machu Picchu or going into other areas of, you know, into Peru and Lima, etc. So they've got some wonderful packages on that Delphin 3. And last but not least, there's a cruise planner out at the moment by Travel Marvel, where they've got all the coastlines covered. They're considering that they've got some small ships cruising so many beautiful coastlines, Australia, Japan, Italy, Croatia, Norway, also the rivers of Portugal, Vietnam, Cambodia and Central Europe, and they've got lots of early bird discounts on those. So it's a cruise paradise at the moment if you want to grab a bargain. And look, there's some wonderful destinations. As you can just hear by some of the areas we've mentioned, there's just the world your oyster. Pick a destination and there'll be a cruise ship operating there.
Yeah, and we all love an early bird discount.
We certainly do.
Nothing
like an early bird discount. What's it? The early bird catches the worm.
The early bird catches the cruise.
It catches the cruise in this case, yes.
Thank you, Sal.
Thanks,
we'll
Amanda.
Catch up again next week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.